Today I wanted to continue with what I started a couple of weeks ago with dealing with questions and answers. Actually, as I've said before, the Buddha taught primarily just responding to people. He would wander about, and people in whatever village or town he was with would come and ask him questions, or else every evening he would gather with his monastics, monks and nuns, and they would ask him questions and he would respond. So oftentimes we hear in the, on Sundays we give a Dharma talk like on a certain subject, but today I'm dealing with questions. 2 weeks ago I dealt primarily with questions of people live who were either on in the hall or online, and today I want to deal with questions that have come to me in different ways. And I tried to, there are a lot of them, I tried to pick questions that I think are relevant to all of us. And again, we are all, we're all in this together. We're all in this mess together. So I think many of us share many common questions and issues. So this says, and I kind of brought several together. So this question was, what does it mean to be open and not attached to my views in the face of the current state of affairs in this country and the world? Many people I know express frustration, fear, anger, despair in reaction to current affairs and are looking for guidance on how to work with non-attachment to views when they find themselves quite reactive. So, and here's somebody else, it's a little different. It says, how do I remain present in the face of very adverse events in my life? Loss of job, trying to find another one, economic hardship, physical illness of loved ones, finding a place to live. And now somebody else, so I've sort of, again, worked them together, says, I've heard these teachings so many times and understand them clearly. So why do I continue to get caught up in my frustration, anxiety, and anger? Patience with my parents, my boss, my partner, my children, and all that when I want to be open, loving, and at ease. Why don't I seem to change? So any of these things relevant to anybody here? Good. So, you know, it's important also that we realize we're not the only ones. Many of us feel like, you know, what's wrong with me? But these are common. So let me sort of, I'll kind of move through them. So the first one, I think this is somebody, we have an intensive going on, dealing with the 14 mindfulness trainings of the Order of Interbeing that was founded by Thich Nhat Hanh. And one of the first one is about non-attachment to views. And many people find it quite difficult. So we have current state of affairs in this country and the world. Is that true? That's just a fact. There's lots going on in the world, right? On every realm, social, political, economic, ecological, climate. I mean, there's just lots of things going on in the world. Is that true? Okay, so this is the world we live in, as well as there's all kinds of things going on in our personal life. Loss of job, trying to find another one, economic difficulties, physical illness, finding a place to live. Is this unusual? No. Okay. Anybody ever been impatient with their parents, their boss, their partner, their children? Anybody ever, you know, that unusual circumstance? Right. Yeah, so here we are, this is life, right? And this is not unique, right? I mean, if we study history, we realize these kinds of issues have always been there, right? In the affairs of human beings, both in terms of societal issues, world type issues, country type issues, as well as personal issues. So this is the matrix of life that we all find ourselves in. So there's nothing unusual about this, right? And this is really what Buddhism is all about as a teaching. It's like, how can we navigate this life, right? Which, if we're not careful, can lead to so much suffering. When I say suffering, I don't just mean suffering, you know, there's plenty of, But I mean, in Buddhism, afflictive emotions, anger, frustration, fear, anxiety, sadness, despair. I mean, all these things, this is all affliction. This is all suffering. I mean, this is this is why we're here, right? You know, our minds are agitated. We don't have peace of mind. We don't have a peaceful, open heart. You know, all the things, we find so difficult, and we think the problem is where? Is outside. So we think, how can I have an open heart? How can I have a peaceful mind? How can I be non-judgmental? How can I do all these things with the world and the people in it? And even the people in my family and the people I work with, you know, how could I possibly, right, be at peace, be calm, be open-hearted, be loving, compassion, understanding with all of this, right? Now, it's funny, yesterday I started doing a three-week class on stress and anxiety. 80 people signed up. Why do you think that is? Right? Yeah. Yeah. So there are many ways to approach this. And again, I think it's very interesting, the last one who said, you know, this is somebody who obviously I've heard these teachings many times, understand them clearly. So why do I still get caught up in impatience, anger, and, you know, patient, my parents, you know, why don't I change? I think this is really sort of kind of gets, you know, there are like two parts to this question. One part is learning how to change the way we relate to everything in the world and ourselves, right? I mean, that's the first part. And then the second part is, after the learning, is how do I really live it, right? And this is really, so let me divide that into two questions, because I think that's often the challenge. So the world is, I'm about to say the world is what it is. But I think that's very hard for us to accept, right? And this is sort of the fundamental place in terms of the if I could call it, the Buddhist view of the world and situations and ourselves, is everything is just what it is. But this is not a kind of like, oh, everything is just what it is, you know, kind of, okay, sera, sera, it's all cool. Yeah, it's not like that, you see. It's really based on an understanding of karma, or causes and conditions. Right. So this is not just kind of a namby-pamby kind of idea that we impose on life, right? Come on, just accept everything, right? Stop causing yourself a lot of problems, just accept it all. See, that's very superficial, and that will not hold up in the face of reality. What will hold up is if we really take the time to deeply reflect on causes and conditions. What has created everything? See, in Buddhism, it's like, for every effect, there had to have been a cause, right? For every effect, which means everything that's going on, everything that's manifesting, whether in my own mind, my own emotions, my own relationships, my own family, at work, the world, it's all arising, it's all manifesting because of causes and conditions. And they're myriad. Some are very strong, some are, you know, a lot of it's complex. But the understanding is, things are the way they are, people are the way they are, I am the way I am, the climate is the what it is, everything is what it is, war, all these things are coming about because of what? Causes and conditions. Causes relate, you know, causes are things that push us along, right? Causes, but also the conditions also affect, right? So, anger can arise in us, a strong view can arise in us, But what are the conditions in which that strong view or that anger arises in my own mind? Right? Is there any kind of self-awareness in my mind? Is there any kind of mindfulness of what's arising in my mind? Is there any kind of value system about how I want to be in the world that's also in my mind? So when those things arise, when those effects manifest, right, the conditions and how they arise is also very important, right? Can you see? I mean, you know, you can buy a packet of seeds, good seeds, you know, you want to grow some vegetables and flowers, right? But if you plant them in poor soil and you don't water them and you don't fertilize them and they don't get enough sun, those are the conditions, they won't grow, right? So causes and conditions are really what it's about. So our anger, our frustration, our despair of what's going on in the world, and again, you know, this cuts right across, right? You know, we have all these political views, people on the right, people on the left, people are conservative, people are progressive, but everybody's unhappy. You know, everybody thinks it should be different, right? I mean, it's just bizarre. It doesn't matter where you are, right, or what side you are, or even if you do get happy, you're only happy for a few minutes because something has happened that's make, you know, that agrees with you. You know, but you pick up the paper tomorrow or next year, it's all gone the other way. So it's also this world of endless change. So we can either spend our life in reactivity because of our strong views. What does that mean, strong views? Right? What does that mean? So does anybody here have a view about anything? Yeah, I mean, it's normal to have views, to have ideas, to have biases, to have all these things, to, you know, I mean, we go into Publix, we don't just buy everything, do we? We have things, there are things we go to, things we like, things we don't like, things, right? That's just the human condition. So in Buddhism, it's not about that we're not human beings, but the key thing is non-attachment to views. This is the freedom. The freedom is not, oh, I got to get rid of all my views, I got to get all the right views, I got to get rid of all the wrong views. It's like, I just have to be non-attached to my views. Non-attached means what? That's attached. Holding on, no matter what. It's either my view or the highway, right? Maybe you might have heard that growing. Strong views. You know, what happens with strong views? What happens when we get attached? Then we suffer. Why do we suffer? Because either what's going on is not what we want to go on, or things change, or, you know, people aren't acting the way we want them to act, the world is not showing up the way we want it to be, things are not appearing in my life the way I want them to appear, right? And in the face of all that arising and passing, and that change, we're just like frozen, right? Because we have strong beliefs about how things should be, you know? I mean, this one about their family, you know? It's like, my parents are not acting, they're not the people I want them to be, right? Anybody ever have that one? Yeah. My parents are not the people I want them to be. We never think, we may not be the child they want either. We just make it about ourselves, right? You know, I'm impatient with my parents, my boss, who's my boss, is who he is, or who she is, but what? We think that they should be what? Different. But that's like fantasy thinking. That's imagination. In reality, your boss is your boss, and they're the product of their causes and conditions, right? That's why they're showing up the way they are. Is that true or not? It's hard for us to kind of stop and go, oh, that's what's going on. Now, it doesn't mean you don't learn how to deal with it, or you don't, you know, there aren't things you can do. It's not like, you know, you can't do anything, you know what I mean? Or it's passivity, but it's like you don't come from this place that things should not be the way they are. If you think about it, even that is a crazy statement, because things are the way they are. Is that true? Right? Like the cushions are blue. Is that true? I could go, God, if there's one thing I hate is blue. Well, that's you, right? But that's coming from inside you. That has nothing to do with the blue color. The blue, it can't help but being blue, right? Somebody made it that way. It's the way it is. The flower is the way it is. This is the way this is. Everything is, you're who you are. Why? Because of your causes and conditions. Right? Each of us are created by our causes and conditions. The world is created by causes and conditions. Climate is changed by, is caused by, war is caused by causes and conditions. I mean, everything that goes on in the world arises because of causes and conditions. If we stand outside and resist, we end up with a lot of emotionality, right? But there is a better way, which is what? Embrace the world as it is and work, if you want, to make it better. You know, embrace your family, embrace your parents, embrace your partner, embrace your work, you know, and do what you can to make it better. I mean, at the end of the day, isn't that what you're going to do? Or you're just going to go, well, there's really no way to change it. I'm going to stick with this job. He is who he is. She is who she is. All right, so I'll just learn how to cope with it better. You know, let go. Let go, let go, let go. Yeah, so somebody says, but I've heard these teachings so many times. Like, this is another time here. I'm going blah, 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 right? Now, why don't people get it? See, that's a very interesting point. Some people go, gee, here Fred's doing his causes and conditions rant. You know, how many times do I got to hear this? Well, unfortunately, we have to hear it as many times until we get it. And if we're still in that place where we have anxiety and fears and anger and depression and sadness and all these things, then we still don't get it, do we? And we have to ask ourselves, why don't I get it? You know, the Buddha said, this was 2,600 years ago, hear my teaching, reflect on my teaching, then practice the teaching. Okay? This is the problem. We hear the teachings, we read the teachings, and then we what? And then we try to practice. But we don't practice, do we? Right? Like this person says, you know, just out the door, you know. You know, I've heard the teachings of blah, blah, blah. You know, I want to be open and loving and understanding and be at peace. So that's going on where? Up here. Right? In the world of thought. In the world that anybody, you know, if you've meditated, you've watched, our thoughts are a very stable, solid, continuous thing. I mean, what have you noticed in your half-hour meditation? What? What? Monkey mind. Thoughts are just coming and going. Thoughts are coming. So if you think you're going to get stability and consistency and follow-through, if all your understanding is in the realm of thought, forget it. Right? So we need to first hear the teachings, receive them openly, then we need to reflect. Is it true? Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've been talking now for a while. You heard what I've been saying. How many of you are really, when you leave here today, going to reflect? What was he saying today? Is that true? I mean, does that make sense? Is that really what's going on in the world? It's just causes and conditions? gee, let me look at my own life. Is that really what's happened to me since birth? Is that what's happened to everybody in my family? Is that what happened to everybody I know? Is that what's the story of the world? It's just the endless movement of causes and conditions, endlessly changing. So we need to reflect that we're either convinced this is true, right? This is true. I know it to be true. This is a principle or a tenet that I can operate under, and it helps me understand and navigate this life. And then we have to do what? We have to practice, unfortunately, right? So hearing the teachings and reflecting is not enough, because it's got to get down here, you see. And we've been attached to our views for a long time. And these teachings are very new to us. So if we want to change, we have to practice them. When do we practice them? Every time, every time. I mean, that would be best. Every time that resistance to life, to people, to situations arises. We have to remind ourselves what? They are who they are because of their causes and conditions. Maybe they're suffering too. They're just like me. You know what I mean? You see, if we're not practicing what we're learning in real life, in real situations, change will not occur. How could it occur? Right? If you read the book about watercolors and you watch some videos online about how to do it, and you've thought about it and said, yeah, I really would like to be a watercolorist. I really like to learn how to do this. Right? You've read a lot of books. You've listened to a lot of talks. It all makes sense to you. You've looked at the techniques. They all make sense to you. Does that make you a good artist? Yeah. It's logical. If we want to be a good artist, we have to take what we've learned and practice it. And over time, we may not become great, right? But we could become decent at it. So if we want to end our suffering, that we clearly see what's causing it, then the only way to change that is to change how we are in the world, to change the way we view things, to change the way we respond to things, right? People, situations. It means every time our habit energy wants to take us down the road we've always gone on, there's got to be something, you know, it's called mindfulness. Remember we practiced a little mindfulness earlier? Some of you may be new. It's not just a meditative technique, you see. It really is about, it helps us change. Because if we don't have mindfulness in our life, if we're not aware of what's arising in our bodies and in our mind and our thoughts and our feelings, see, if there's no self-awareness, how are we ever going to change anything? See, it's impossible. So we need a means that we can be aware of what's going on within us and what's going on around us. Okay? Yeah, so we want to change. And so we need to practice. We need to hear the teachings. I can learn to be an open, loving person. I can develop a peaceful, calm mind. I can be free of fear and anxieties and sadness and depression. Wow, it sounds wonderful. Right, doesn't it? I mean, who wouldn't buy that? Right? So, you know, I've heard it, I've read the books, I've reflected, it makes sense to me. You know, and then people go, but how come it's not happening? I think now we understand why it's not happening. There's got to be that peace. And for people who go, you know, why is it that I still have the same stuff I've had for many years, same issues, you know, it's like because I really haven't gotten it yet. I haven't really reflected deep enough. I really haven't set the aspiration that I want to change. And then I haven't gone about practicing. I mean, everybody who's listening to me has learned, right? I mean, we all started out as young children, right? So we don't know anything. We don't have any skills. Right? We have parents who do everything for us. Every one of us have learned. We've mastered at least one language that we're fluent in. Congratulations, right? You know, we've mastered all kinds of skills. We've gotten educated. We've gotten careers. We learned how to play sports. We learned how to play music. You know what I mean? There's so many things we've learned that we didn't know. And all that learning did not just happen. It happened because there was a lot of work, trial and error, practice. So transformation, unfortunately, involves the same thing. Except it has to be very conscious. We have to be very clear what we're doing. It turns out we want to change. So here's another question. Having a daily sitting meditation, I can feel more calm. I'm benefiting from the intensive. For those who are new, we do these 3 6-month intensive periods of practice. I am benefiting from the intensive. And I'm seeing and hearing that other folks are learning. So some of the day, I do feel more calm. But traumatic memories from the past still have a habit of arising. And then I am flooded with experiencing negative thoughts and feelings. And then I become lost. I often feel disheartened and not sure. It's interesting. I'm not sure how to ask the teacher because the answer seems so obvious and simple. And then I become ashamed that this stuff still comes up so strong. So again, you know, may not be exactly, but I think this is something we can all relate to. So again, this is the problem. We are the product of our causes and conditions. Some of our causes and conditions don't have a lot of strength and intensity, and we can change. There are a lot of habits, right, that we can change. Anybody here, I don't know, change their diet in the last 10 years? Right? If you had, just raise your hand. Yeah, I mean, it takes effort, but is it really hard? No, it's not. Especially if you know the benefits. There's lots of habits, you know, that we that we're able to change. But there's some that are not easy, right? That are more deeply seated. And oftentimes, it's in the realm of this kind of thing that they're calling trauma. There have been experiences in our life that when they happened, the human being was traumatized by it. Right? I mean, I think we all, that's very common these days, right? So I think I don't need to go into that. Everybody sort of understand that experience. So they're traumatized. Something highly extraordinary, unusual, and obviously afflictive or negative has happened to this person. And they had a traumatic experience. But what they're talking about is not that I had a traumatic experience in the past, a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Some people, the traumatic experience might have happened 40, 50 years ago. And they say, still, when out of nowhere, something happens, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm like right back there. Is that everybody know what we're talking about?
Yeah.
So this is, again, we're all a product of our causes and conditions. If you've had these kind of experiences in the past, and if you've, if they have been alive in you for many years, they have strength, right? They have strength. So it could be that there are many other kinds of changes we're making in our life in terms of our emotionality. We're less irritated, we're less anxious, we're less scared, you know what I mean, on kind of certain areas of our life. But there are often these deeper ones, right, that still come up, and they take us over and flood us, right? And I'm sure many of the people who are listening now know that experience, or know somebody else who's having that experience. It is not these days that unusual. Yeah. So the first thing is what? That's what's happening. So all this, I'm feeling disheartened. I'm ashamed that it's still happening. All this is arising because somebody is not accepting what's arising within them. Do you see? That's the fundamental issue. So in our practice, we accept everything. We accept everything in the external world, and we accept everything in the internal world as it arises. Because as this person says, it arises by itself. I'm not thinking, let me bring up that traumatic memory and make myself feel miserable. It doesn't work that way. It just arises. And again, it may not be the extremity of what this person's talking about, but this is what we deal with all day. Things arise. Habitual ways of responding and feeling arise. Unbidden. You sit in meditation. Right? Did you plan out every thought you were going to have? No. Thoughts just arise. They're not under our control. They have a life of their own. Our thoughts, our feelings, our perceptions, our memories have a life of their own. And when the causes and conditions are ripe, they arise. So again, it is really sort of like the first one. This is just the way it is. Now, you know, there's an expression that says a practice begins with the second thought, right? Not the first thought. The first thought just comes up. The first reaction just comes up. It's as you know, it just happens. It has a life of its own. Don't be upset by it. Don't try to repress it. Don't struggle with it. It's here. The question is, what do I do now, you see? What do I do now? If somebody still has a lot of things that are arising from years ago, to me that means the wound is still alive. It's like having a wound in your body. If that wound doesn't heal, it still hurts, especially when it's touched or poked, right? If it's healed, it doesn't hurt. So if something in our emotional life from a while ago still hurts and really hurts, it tells me we have not devoted enough attention to directly healing it. The body and the mind, in a certain way, are similar. The body has the capacity over time to heal, right? our wounds will heal. It doesn't mean we don't take good care of it, we don't clean it, we don't dress it, we don't have sutures put in, you know, all that stuff. But if we take care of it, it will heal. The wound will heal. Because the body has this great regenerative capacity. The mind is the same. But we have to take good care of it. Oftentimes, when these repetitive patterns and eruptions have happened, we don't take good care of it. We just let it run wild. We let it take over. So this takes kind of a strong self-awareness that I know when something's arising in me. And oftentimes it seems like it just flood. But often it's not like that, you see. Often it's sort of, there's a small kind of movement in the direction of, but we don't attend to it at that level. We only attend to it when it erupts. But we don't know all the kind of buildup, the little signs, right? It is much easier to take care of something like that when it's not so strong and powerful. But oftentimes we don't, it's like take anger. Okay. Anybody here ever been angry? No, nobody's ever been angry. All right. And there must be somebody who's been angry. I've been angry. Okay. You know, sometimes it's just an eruption, but that's very rare. Usually it's what? It begins with what? What? Thought. Irritated. Somebody's doing something that's irritating us. And then we begin to what? Right, over and over, right? First it's just an irritation, then it's, I can't believe this person did this. I can't believe, after they told me they weren't gonna do it, they're still doing it. You see what I'm saying? And then all of a sudden, well, you know, God, they really are so insensitive and they're so, now what's happening in our mind as we are ramping up? Our emotions are ramping up. And what started out a little irritation becomes now angry. And we remember all the other times they did it. And then we start remembering all the other people who've done things to us, you know? See, it kind of expands. Before you know it, we're just what? Angry. And then all of a sudden we go, phew, I'm really bent out of shape on this one. And then we try to intervene. But it's like, you know, it's like a 5-alarm fire. Much easier to put out when it was just irritation, just beginning. Anxieties are the same way, negative thinking's the same way. Yeah. So we have to accept and we have to work with what arises. We don't judge, we don't get down on ourselves, we don't even get down on anybody else. Because why are they doing what they're doing? Even though what they did hurt us or this and that. Why did they do it? I mean, is it just like, you know, we're the only nice person in this relationship? That's what we get into, isn't it? How does such a nice, compassionate person like me end up with such selfish jerks? I mean, it's just outrageous. That's the way we think. And now we laugh. Because it's what? Because the other person's thinking the same thing about us. Is that clear? So everything arises because of causes and conditions. And we need to learn to take care of the things that are arising within us. We have to be very diligent. You know, if we want to really change, if there are things in my body that need to be healed, that need attention, then I need to focus on it. right? If I don't focus on it, is it going to get better? Probably not. Same thing in our minds. But again, we, you know, the problem is our minds are hidden. Do you notice that? Like, we see each other, but when we see each other, we see our what? We see our bodies. I mean, that's what we see when we see another person, right? And then they speak, and we hear their words. So it's not that hard to see another human being and see them in terms of their body and their speech. But as you know within yourself, the biggest part of what's going on within us is going on where? In our minds. We can't see other people's minds, but we can see their behavior and their words. And it's also hard for us to see our own minds. We just see, you know, what our body and speech is doing, but we don't see where it's coming from. So that's another reason why mindfulness, meditation, all these self-awareness, all these kinds of things which kind of seem spiritual or something, really aren't. They're really the basis for, I would say, you know, a healthy mind. Because without this, how can we heal our minds? How can we heal our hearts if we're not attentive to when they hurt? And to look deeply to go, well, maybe this is not just a current hurt, maybe this is a long-term hurt that's just manifesting in this situation once again. You see, what's the cause? So please don't be ashamed. And somebody else said, I'm thinking the practices won't work for me because a lot of negative feelings and thoughts and emotional affliction arise when practicing, especially during formal meditation. What's wrong with me? Why do the practices work for everyone else but not me? So when we sit in meditation, what is happening? Right? When we sit in meditation, what is happening? Yeah, things are getting real. Which means what? You're just aware of what's going on, right? Thoughts arise, feelings arise, emotions arise. Right, just like that. So that's good, you see. That's good practice, to be aware. You know, when the mind is not going off in 20 million directions, you know, most of us, we spend our life in distractibility, right? We're just all over the place. So we're often not very aware of what's going on inside me, which is a problem because these days there's a lot going on inside people, isn't there? So, ending the distractibility and the endless dispersion and learning to be present, to stop. When we sit down, we stop. And we relax our minds and we open them and we focus. And in that calmness, we see what's there. You know, the analogy is, you know, the analogy is like, if we go to the beach and we're just kind of stirring up stuff in the water and walking around and kicking around, everything gets stirred up and you can't see, right? It's murky. You can't see the bottom, you can't see the fish, you can't see what's there. But if you stop and you let all the sediment and the sand settle down to the bottom, then what? Then the water's clear and you can see what's there. Stingray. So you can see what's there. All right? So the fact in meditation, now we're seeing and feeling things, is just revealing to us what's already there, right? There are many people, when they're new to meditation, they say, phew, you know, since I started meditating, I have so many more thoughts, right? Well, that's not true. You're just noticing for the first time that you have thoughts constantly passing through your mind. It's all that's going on. And that is good. We're becoming aware. Right? So the fact that when this person's sitting, negative thoughts and feelings and emotions arise, that's okay. We want to be present to ourselves. Again, the question is, usually, during the course of our day, when these things arise, we are either, we distract ourselves, we're too busy, we go do something else, because we don't want to what? We don't want to deal with it. We don't want to feel it. We want to escape. We don't like this stuff. Or we act out. That's the other great thing we love to do. We act out. I'll just discharge it on somebody else. Or I'll go eating, or I'll go shopping, or I'll go, you know, watch a movie. You know what I mean? I'll do anything but be present to it. You know, when you sit down, like we sat down today, and we've made a commitment, we're not going to escape for 30 minutes. We're stuck with who? We're stuck with ourselves. And for many people in the beginning, that's not often the most pleasant situation. But if we want to change, develop a calm and peaceful mind, develop an open heart, develop all these kinds of positive things, it's the mind that has to be transformed. But before the mind can be transformed, the mind has to be known. And that is where many of us draw a blank. We don't really know ourselves. Or if we know ourselves, we know ourselves through judgment and evaluation and assessment and comparison, you know, that's, but we just don't know ourselves, right? And that's kind of a dangerous way to live, because then how do we make wise choices if we don't know ourselves, we don't know who we really are and what's really meaningful to us and what we really value? Oftentimes we're just led around. You know, again, so this person says, is there something wrong with you? No, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just a human being who's got stuff like everyone else. Now, why are the practices working for everyone else but me? You see, this is just crazy thinking. I mean, how do you know the practices are working for everybody else? Huh? I mean, how do you know that? Are you a great psychic? See into everybody's mind? And not only can you see into everybody's mind and know where they're at, but you can do it all at one time, so you can do comparisons. Right? And therefore, you come up to the conclusion, oh, I get the worst mind. Well, then, you know, if you had those kinds of powers, you know, then the thought, the practice is working for everybody else, is not me, you know, could be true. The thing, of course, everybody could be just better actors than you. You know, who knows? But what I would say is, stop comparing yourself to others. It's another one of these terrible things we do. We are, each one of us is unique. Each one of us is the product of our causes and conditions. That's our uniqueness. I mean, we're all human beings and we all kind of look somewhat the same. You know what I mean? But we're all unique. It's 6 billion, 7, 8 billion people. Each one is unique because everyone is the product of their causes and conditions. And how that mix is unfolded is different for everyone. So the thing to achieve is self-knowledge, self-awareness, self-understanding. So we can be the best me, the happiest me, the most peaceful me, the most compassionate me, the most loving me, the most wise me, you know, all those things. That's my job, right? Let everybody else be who they are. Wouldn't that be easier? Right? Yeah. Let me just do it. Well, this is an interesting one. If worldly activities can only bring temporary happiness, what is the point of doing anything? If worldly activities can only bring temporary happiness, shouldn't we all become monks and nuns? So that's an interesting. So for people who aren't used to kind of Buddhist teachings, in Buddhist teachings, we make a distinction between what we call worldly happiness and a more transcendent happiness. So worldly happiness is really based on one thing it's based on is pleasure, right? Right? We human beings, they endlessly seek pleasure. Is that true? Don't we spend a lot of time in our life seeking pleasure, seeking comfort, seeking, right? So we spend a lot of time seeking pleasure. What is the problem with pleasure? What's the fundamental problem with pleasure? Yeah, it doesn't last. I mean, it's a fundamental problem. So if our life is about having as much pleasure we can have, unfortunately, pleasure only lasts as long as we're having the experience. And maybe there's a little glow afterwards. So therefore, if the way we're finding happiness is through worldly pleasure, we have to keep ourselves always going, seeking more activity, more pleasure. So there's a kind of there's a lack of pleasure in that way of living life. Okay. So that's why we say, you know, and worldly activities, all our activities, because they're subject to impermanence, they don't last either. Right? Success, failure, love, hate. I mean, it's all, the world is endlessly changing. Our minds are changing, people are changing, relationships are changing, work is changing. I mean, it's endlessly changing, right? So one can go, whew, you know, pleasure doesn't last. Everything that I'm trying to rely on and create stability in my life, everything is changing. You know, my body is changing. You know, bodies age, bodies get sick, you know, all kinds of ill. I mean, it's just, you know, relationships. People are here, then they're not here, right? They're alive, then they're dead. I mean, they come and they go. I mean, so you could go, what? Whew, what a mess. All right? I'm going to become a monk and nun. That's what this person said. Isn't that like the obvious choice? What do you think? No, you don't think so? Oh, we're going to have the sign up in the back for afterwards. Right. So if you look around, you see most of us here, there's no monks and nuns. So there is a way that one can be happy, that one can be fulfilled, that one can find meaning and purpose in life within this life. And again, the key thing is non-attachment and understanding. So there is nothing inherently wrong with pleasurable experiences. They're part of what being a human being. But making pleasurable experiences the purpose of your life is highly problematic, right? One, because they're all transient and temporary. And two, it doesn't always work out, does it? A lot of times in our pursuit of pleasure, we are frustrated. Right? It doesn't work out the way we thought. Right? Vacation took another turn. The relationship took another turn. The pleasurable experience eventually died out. You know what I mean? So there is an inherent problem with having the purpose of life being pleasure, or to hope that our worldly activities are going to stay permanent because they won't. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not successful. Sometimes they love us, sometimes they don't love us. Sometimes there's pleasure, sometimes there's pain. Sometimes there's health, sometimes there's ill health. Sometimes things work out, sometimes they don't work out. Is that true? Sometimes it's all green going down Nebraska. Sometimes the lights are all red. If my whole purpose and happiness in life is based on getting the green and not getting the red, it's not going to be good, is it? I won't be happy. I'll be happy when it's green, I'll be unhappy when it's red. So I'll always be bouncing for it. And that's the way many of us live our lives. We want everything to go our way. And everything that goes our way, we want them to last. But we don't like things when they don't go our way. And the things that aren't going our way, those things we don't want to last. Right? So we need to learn to work our life in the middle without being attached to either extreme. The light's green, good. The light's red, good. I'm noticed, good. Nobody notices me, good. Things are working, good. Things aren't working, good. That's called, you know what that's called? Equanimity. That's what we want, equanimity. That we can move through life with its ups and downs, successes and failures, pleasures and pains, and be at ease. Continue to be peaceful mind, open-hearted, right? But to do that, we need an inner capacity to do that. If our happiness is always externally driven, I think this is what this person's saying. See, this is the point. Yeah, if your life is totally externally driven and it's only about what's going on out there, gives you happiness or unhappiness, yeah, that's not a very successful way to live, is it? Because it's very conditional. Because we can't control what's going on out there. We can't control people, we can't control situations, we can't control the world, we can't control the weather, right? We can't control anything. We can't control our bodies. It gets sick all by itself. It ages all by itself. So, learning to give up that need for control and learning to accept things as they are allows us, again, to be in the world with exactly the way it is, with its pleasures and its pain, with its successes and its disappointment, with its liking and disliking, with its good and bad, with all the endless contradictions of life, and to be at peace. Why are we at peace? Because we don't have some fantasy that life should be different. We accept reality as it is. So again, I mean, you know, if you want to be a monastic and look to that lifestyle, that's a choice. But, you know, this is, you know, most people in America are lay people. We're householders. We live in the world of family and relationships and work. So we need a practice, a dharma, a way that allows us to live in, you know, normal life, but learn to be happy in it, and to be at ease and to be peaceful. So let me stop now. Any questions about the questions and answers? So nothing new. And this is also for people online that they can chat in. Anybody in the hall, any questions about anything that was said today that doesn't seem right to you, or you don't understand how to apply it in your life? So don't feel like you gotta, you know, buy into it. Any questions? Yes, ma'am.
In reality, when there's someone who's exceptionally suffering, like, say, suicidal, feeling suicidal, what is the best way to be with them so they can help or change?
Yeah, so the question is about how do you help someone who is suicidal, right? Right. So the question is, you know, how do you help someone suicidal? So again, you know, everything is a product of causes and conditions. So the cause and conditions of that person and what has brought them to that place in their life that they want to end their life, you know, is different than the other person who may be in the same place. So it's hard for me to kind of give a generic, but I was a mental health professional for 30 years. So, you know, that's an extreme situation. And you know, the usual kind of deep listening and be there for them and all that, you know, oftentimes may not be the best avenue. You know, you wanna protect somebody from making, when I was in the field, we used to call a long-term solution to a short-term problem. Very dangerous, because somebody has gotten themselves in a place where they feel they're helpless to change anything. So all of a sudden, taking their life becomes the way to deal with it, to stop the pain or to stop the situation. We know that's not true. I mean, people change, people can change, people can heal, people can transform. So. But they're in a place that's very dangerous because they don't see outside, you know, the acuteness of their suffering. So you have to, you know, it's an extreme situation. And I would deal with it, you know, in a very conservative way. Yeah. You know, a lot of suicide these days, right? I mean, it's in the paper. I mean, the suicide rate, especially among young people, but all sectors of society going up. Right? These are the effects of a society where people don't know how to work with their suffering and don't know how to create real happiness and peace and meaning in their lives. So these, even though it's not everybody, I think this is symptomatic, you know. Other questions? Yes.
Fred online. Bill? Yeah. How does simply paying attention to what comes up from an old trauma heal the trauma?
I didn't say that. I said that's where we begin. Right? The same way, if I have a wound here, being attentive to it, knowing I have a wound, is, you know, if I don't know I have a wound and I'm not attentive to it, then I won't do anything. So mindfulness is the key beginning. I'm aware. And then obviously you're aware that there's something in you that has not healed, that still hurts. You know, it could be decades after something has happened. Something has been kept alive in me. Something is frozen in me that needs special attention. You know, and when we say special attention, there are many different ways of going about that special attention. Just there are many ways of taking care of wounds. There are all different kinds of wounds. There are all different kinds of cancers. There are all different kinds of things. But, mindfulness and awareness means we're no longer in denial. We're no longer walling off. We are understanding what's arising in me, and I've looked deeply and I understand the causes. But I also know that for some reason it hasn't healed. There could be lots of reasons why things haven't healed. Some they have not been attended to in the way they needed to be attended to. And some the proper medicine has not been applied, the proper treatment. So it's you know, it's, I can't answer that generically. Okay? So good. So I hope what we shared today was, some of it was helpful or touched you or related to your life. For those who knew, what we practice here, we call engaged Buddhism, which means it's not a Buddhism that you just practice theoretically or philosophically, or it's not ritual, it's all that. It's really about, you know, taking it into life, engaging with all the aspects of life. So we can learn how to, again, transform. Why? So we can be happy. We can create good, wholesome relations and good, wholesome families and good, wholesome workplaces and, you know, be a counter force to a lot of the toxicity that's in the world today and in people. So thank you all for coming. Please stay for tea.